Sovereign Mind radio program, and I'm your host, Sonia Barrett, broadcasting from Inner Light Radio and BBS Radio on Wednesday, June 18th, 2008, Matrix Time. Join me each Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time as Sovereign Mind explores the nature of the game, the game players, and the strategies in place to hold you spellbound and distracted. Informed guests will bring insight to the silent side of corporations, spiritual concepts, science, and technology, and how they're all being used to influence your choices. We will explore concepts and ideas that will stretch the imagination and potential. We want you to participate by calling in at 310-928-7733 or emailing your questions to innerlightradio@yahoo.com. My guest today is internationally known figure David Icke, British author, who has written 16 books and traveled to over 40 countries since 1990. His research explores the Big Brother fascist dictatorship predicted by George Orwell in his book 1984 and charts the history of the Illuminati. His book reveals how a hidden hand is behind world-changing events like the attack of 9/11 and the manufactured wars in the Middle East as part of a mass mind manipulation technique. He has dubbed problems, reaction, solution. What David Icke wrote about in the 20th century has proved to be so astonishingly accurate in predicting the events of the 21st century and continues to be so. While being hugely controversial and often heavily attacked, David Icke has driven on with his unrelentless imagination, investigation into subject areas that no other author or researcher dare touch. He reveals information that has been kept from a dumbed-down population and has allowed the establishment to treat them as nothing more than slaves to a sinister hidden agenda. Again, you are listening to Sovereign Mind on Inner Light Radio and BBS Radio on Wednesday, June 18th, and we are live with David Icke. David Icke, welcome to Sovereign Mind.
Thank you, Sonia.
Well, let's see. There are a ton load of questions, as you are so used to receiving. And one of the first things that I really want to ask you is, because you put yourself out there in terms of your research and the things that you expose, what in the very beginning, at what point in your life, what stirred you into discovery and into saying, I'm going to do this, I'm going to go out there, and I'm going to make this known?
Whoa, that's a very, very long answer, really, but yeah. I'll try to condense it as best I can. I was born in a place called Leicester in the English Midlands, and I've always been questioning of authority. For me, authority should command respect, not demand it just because it's authority. And it should command respect by its actions and its respect for those that it is supposed to serve. So I've always been questioning of authority, but I became a professional soccer player, and then when arthritis finished that, I went into journalism and television and radio and newspapers, and eventually became a national spokesman for the British Green Party in the 1980s. And then towards the end of the 1980s, about 1989, I started having very, very strange experiences, which I kept to myself and my family for a long time. It was the feeling that if I was in a room alone, I wasn't. And this went on for the best part of a year, and it got more and more powerful until one day I'm working for the BBC and I'm sitting in a hotel in London on my own, and I remember sitting on the side of the bed saying, if there's something there, would you please contact me, because you're driving me up the wall, because it was so powerful. And at this time I'm presenting news programs, I'm presenting television programs and what have you, and I'm getting on with what you might call a normal life, normal by my standards anyway. And then about maybe a week, 2 weeks after, more like a week after I had that hotel experience, I was with my son, who's now a big strapping 26-year-old, he was a little boy then, and I was in a newsagent shop just down the road from where I am now, and he was reading some books, and I said to him, come on, Gaz, we'll go up into the town. And as I turned to leave, my feet were stuck to the ground. They just wouldn't move, and it was like magnets pulling my feet down. And then I heard this really powerful, it wasn't a voice, it was a very strong thought form which passed through my mind, which hadn't been generated by me, and it said, go and look at the books on the far side. So I went over to the books on the far side. I'm really cutting this story short, a lot more happened. And in among the romantic novels was this one book that, because it was so different to the rest, took my attention, and I turned it over, and I read the blurb, and I saw the word psychic, and it hit me. It wouldn't normally, but it hit me because I thought, oh, psychic, I wonder if this person can tell me anything about what this strange phenomenon is around me for month after month after month. So I read it in 24 hours, and I contacted her. I went to see her, and what I said was I had arthritis, true, and I wasn't taking any medicine for it because I wanted, I wanted to live, and I have a stomach that was wrecked and a body that was wrecked. So could she maybe help me? I said nothing about all this other stuff that was happening to me, and I went to see her and a couple of times, the hands-on healing and all that stuff, and we had a nice chat about things. Third time I went, I'm lying there on this medical-type bench, and suddenly I felt like a spider's web on my face very strongly. And what struck me is I'd read in her book about spider's web feeling on your face and how that can be when other dimensions, as she put it, was trying to contact you or whatever. Anyway, I said nothing to this lady, and about 10 or 15 seconds later, she suddenly launched her head back and said, my God, I've got to close my eyes for this one. This is powerful. And I'm my backside is slipping down this bench at this time, thinking, oh my goodness, what have I got into here? And then she started telling me that this figure in her mind was saying that passed messages to me, and that I was going to go out on a world stage and I was going to reveal great secrets, that there was a shadow across the world that had to be lifted, there was a story that had to be told, one man cannot change the world, but one man can communicate the message that can change the world. That was one of the lines I remember. And that basically I was going to face enormous opposition, but they, whoever, quote, they are, I still don't know that, were always going to be there to protect me. And, I'm sitting there listening to this thinking, you're having a laugh, mate. What's all this about? And what actually happened in the days and weeks after that is that my life suddenly transformed. The BBC sent me a letter out of the blue, not renewing my contract, so now I'm out of work. I had no inclination to go back elsewhere in the media, and suddenly my life became this synchronistic journey of people and events and experiences and books and documents, it was like handing me pieces in a puzzle, but handing me them in the order that I could understand where they fitted most easily. And the more pieces that I came across, and the more that I put them in the place with the rest of them, the more, like a jigsaw puzzle, the picture became clearer and clearer and clearer, until I'm putting the pieces in the puzzle like at lightning speed, because once you get to a certain point, you can see where it's going, you can see what you're looking at. And I had this about a year after that, when I've started to compile this information, and I've written my first book called Truth Vibrations back in 1990, 91 on this. I I had this overwhelming feeling to go to Peru, and I got on a plane to Peru, not knowing why I was going, just overwhelming intuition to go to Peru. Again, cut a very long story short, amazing things happened to me in Peru. And it culminated when I was with this Peruvian guide who was taking me around and organizing the travel. And he put us in this hotel in a place called Puno in southern Peru, not far from Lake Titicaca. And it was called the Siustani Hotel, and it was named after an Inca ruin site about an hour and a half drive away. So I go out there with this tourist bus, just me. It was out of season. I had to hire it. It cost me a fortune. With this tourist bus and this driver and the guide, and we went out to Siustani, and it was beautiful. It was an uninhabited area, a big hill with the lagoon and all the ruins on the top. And I walked around for about an hour or so, and it was really nice. But what I felt, what I experienced there, didn't match the extraordinary urge that I had to go to that place. And so we got in the bus, and I'm feeling quite disappointed, really. And we're going away from it, back to Puno, and I'm looking out the window and daydreaming away. And then suddenly I saw this mound to my right, and as I looked at the mound, all I can say is all I could hear in my mind as I looked at this mound was, "Come to me, come to me, come to me." I'm thinking, "Crikey, that mound's talking to me. What's going on?" So, mind you, by this time I'm starting to get quite blasé about it because so many amazing things are happening to me. So I asked for the guy to stop the bus, and I got out of the bus. I went up to the top of up the mound, and what I couldn't see from the road, only when I got up there, was a circle of standing stones about waist high, and it was like a mini Stonehenge. And I walked into the center, and I'm looking back at Siustani and the distant mountains, and it's a beautiful, beautiful view, and there's not a cloud in the sky, just a piercing Peruvian sun. I've got a big red nose to prove it. And I'm standing there thinking, this is beautiful. And then suddenly, the feet went again, like in the newsagent shop. And these magnets started, like magnet feelings started pulling my feet to the ground, and I felt like this drill going in the top of my head. And what I can now understand was energy going down through my body into the earth, and then another flow coming back up. And then I heard this, again, very strong thought form go through my mind. First one said, they'll be talking about this 100 years from now. And I'm thinking, talking about what? and then came the next one, which sounded completely insane. It will be over when you feel the rain. And it was just extraordinary because it was just a blue sky from horizon to horizon. Anyway, this energy got stronger and stronger, and my body's shaking in the end. It was so powerful. And I kept going in and out of consciousness, like when you're driving a car and you forget where the last 2 miles has gone. At one point when I came back to consciousness and awareness, I saw light gray mist over the distant mountains. And as the time passed, although time kept disappearing and meaning nothing in this period, the mist got darker, and it was clear it was pouring with rain over the distant mountains. And over a period of time, the rain came out of the mountains. It took a while because they were a long way away, and started coming towards me. And it was an extraordinary sight. I mean, if you did it in a movie, they'd say that was far-fetched. You know, weather people talk about weather fronts coming across. Well, this was a front. It was like someone had drawn a ruler, a straight line across the sky, and it was coming towards me. On one side, where I was beautiful blue sky, and then there was this rainstorm coming out, and I watched it coming towards me. It was like stair rods, and it was like curtains coming across the land and across the sky, and eventually the rain hit me. And by this time, my body's shaking like I'm being hit by some kind of electric, massive electrical current. As soon as the rain hit me, that current stopped, and I staggered forward. I could hardly stand. My legs were gone, and it was just an extraordinary experience. And in the days that followed, probably in the 2 to 3 months that followed, I went into a space where I've described it before as like when you press too many keys on a computer and the computer just locks up and freezes and says, "I can't process all this information, I'm shut down." And information was pounding into my head, concepts, understandings, everything. And it took about 3 months for it to morph into some kind of clarity. And from then on, my journey started. And massive amount of information I've compiled started to come towards me even more synchronistically and in more volume than it even in that period before.
Wow. I mean, I felt that it was definitely important to hear that, because so many people listen to you, they're drawn to your work, they're excited, they love it. But I think to really have an idea as to what stirred you, that it didn't just come out of, you know, of nowhere. And it sounds to me as if there is no doubt, obviously we're all here for a reason, but that guidance or that connection that you were receiving, have you ever really connected it with anything? Is it just you, a greater aspect of you, or is it, what do you contribute that to?
Well, in the end, everything's a greater aspect of us.
Because absolutely.
We are everything. Mm. We are the mm-hmm. ocean. What we call individuality is our point of observation within the ocean at any one point. And I've been through in this period from when that happened up to the present day, and it's still happening, a process where that point of observation continues to move, and it's moving symbolically, if you like, outwards, further and further outwards. So I'm seeing more and more of the picture. We used to have these, I forget what it was called now, but when I was a kid in England, they used to have this quiz program on television. And one of the rounds every week was when they took a big, big, big close-up of something, an everyday object, and then they would ask the contestants what that object was, and if they didn't know, they would pull out a bit more and ask them again, anybody know who it is? And eventually they would pull out to reveal what it was, and it would be a real everyday thing. It might be a sponge, it might be a spoon, anything. But in close-up, it looked like anything other than that. It might look like a moonscape or whatever. And symbolically, we focus so much and are encouraged and manipulated to focus so much on the twigs that we actually don't see the forest and the way everything connects. And so what's happened in this period is more and more my point of observation has moved out from this reality, out from the five senses, and I've started to see a picture which you can't see when you're in the myopia tunnel vision of five sense reality alone. And so my journey of deprogramming myself from the programs we all get subjected to from cradle to grave, plus the genetic programs that we inherit, has been fundamental to the journey of uncovering this, because people who have a preconceived idea, who have a religious belief that is not negotiable, have a political belief that's not negotiable, have no chance of understanding the nature of the reality that we're living in, because they'll edit out or refuse to investigate anything that would be a threat to their belief system, their preconceived idea, their non-negotiable belief. And so you have to come to this with an open mind. And also, I always work on this phrase that the ancient Greek philosopher Socrates is supposed to have said. It doesn't matter if he did or he didn't. It's a brilliant phrase. Wisdom is knowing how little we know. So your mind is always open. Not to believe anything. No. But you're always open to all possibility, because in the end, at Sonia, that's what we live in. This ocean of mm-hmm. consciousness is all possibility. So everything is possible. Whether it's actually happening in the reality that we are experiencing is, you know, up to people to decide. But the fact that everything is possible is a gimme. That's the reality we live in. And so as you quite rightly say in your introduction, I've gone into areas that other people will not touch, either because, A, they are confusing possibility with their own perception. People do that all the time. The limits of their own perception become their limits of possibility. They're not the same thing. Your limits of perception are the limits you've put on possibility, but that's not the limit of what's possible. And so people will dismiss anything that's beyond the norm because they're confusing the limits of possibility with the limits of their own perception. And some people who understand that there's more to know, they still won't go there because they fear what other people will think about them if they start talking about this stuff. So they stay in a comfort zone. And I won't do that. I'm interested in one thing and one thing alone. What's going on and how we can get this place back to the paradise it once was and the paradise it will be again, and break the walls of the prison, the unseen prison, the unseen bars on the cell door and the cell walls. That's what I'm interested in, and I'll go anywhere in pursuit of that. And if people think I'm crazy or whatever, well, they'll just have to think that. I ain't bothered. I'm interested in the truth and what's going on. That's my first, middle, and last.
That leads into my next question on, actually. And in what I want to find out from you is kind of a wide open question, but, and you've talked about it, but is there a beginning point? What would you say is the beginning point to this level of the game or matrix then that we call reality, in the sense of the diluted or dumbed down sleep phase that humanity is caught in?
Well, my jury is kind of out on one thing, although more and more I'm being moved towards the fact that this reality, this matrix, is actually not negative in itself, but mm-hmm. it's been hijacked, or at least this part of it's been hijacked. I've understood over the years that I have to understand, at least get a reasonable grasp on an enormous number of subjects before you can actually put the puzzle pieces together. And one thing that is missed by the vast majority of researchers into this, and is ignored by the vast majority of people, is a simple question. What is reality? What is reality? What is this world we live in? And this guidance, whatever if you might call it, has been leading me now for about 3-4 years, maybe more and more into this whole question, what is reality? Because that's where the key lies to opening the cell door. Because a massive part of the prison, the enslavement, has been to disconnect us from an understanding of what reality is. And if we don't know en masse, but the few in the shadows do, they are in an enormous position of power. And it's clear and clear and clear and clearer to me now that what we live in is, in effect, a version of the wireless internet. We are, when I say we are, I'm talking about the physical level of us, is a transmitter-receiver of information. I'm now sitting here looking at a computer screen, and if I said to someone, describe the internet to me, they would talk about graphics and websites and text and pictures and colors and all the rest of it. But the only place the internet exists in that form is on the screen I'm looking at. Everywhere else, it's electronic circuits and on-off electrical pulses. If I said to someone, describe television to me, they'd describe pictures on a screen. But the only place television exists in that form is on the screen. Everywhere else, it is electronic circuits and frequency fields. And our reality is just like that. I'm sitting here now, and I'm looking into apparently empty space, but in that empty space lies the wireless internet. And all I have to do to access that is put my computer on, and it will access the wireless internet. It will pull out of the invisible. It will pull out the internet, the World Wide Web, which doesn't exist until I turn the computer on, tune into it, and then there it is on the screen. Now, we're doing that with our genetic structure, especially the brain. we are tuning in to the holographic wireless internet, or to the wireless matrix, and we are manifesting a holographic version of that in our minds, in our heads, if you like, which is our screen, our equivalent of the computer screen or the television screen. And so the only place that this reality exists in the so-called solid three-dimensional form that appears to be, although it isn't, it's holographic, is actually in our minds. There is nothing out there in three-dimensional form. It's all in there, but it appears to be outside of us, but it's actually an illusory projection. And so what has happened is, it seems to me more and more, is very much like happens in China with the, you know, conventional internet. They have firewalled off the internet so that Chinese computers can only access certain limited areas of it, and they cannot access vast areas of it that the Chinese government don't want the people to access and the information that exists there. Now, because we're talking about in those terms a computer system, what they do is they firewall off the computer system's ability to access, tune into, if you like, that area of the internet that they don't want Chinese people to access. Now, for me, the more I understand this, is that some force has firewalled off us on a genetic level so that the range of frequencies that we are accessing is a fraction of what we could access if we were in the normal course of events before the intervention. And it's interesting, you know, we talk the language of what's going on all the time. When people are unable to see anything but a tiny fraction of possibility, what we call them is narrow-minded or closed-minded. Now, that is precisely what the situation is. Narrow-minded relates and translates into this as a narrow band of frequencies that those people are accessing. And the narrower the band of frequencies you're accessing, the narrower and more limited is your perception of possibility, which is why I said earlier that as the years have passed since this amazing awakening started for me consciously, I've been moving my point of observation more and more. And in effect, what that's been doing is opening up the range of frequencies that I'm accessing. Now, this is not because I'm some special person who's come from the stars. Anyone can do it. Anyone can do it. But it's a matter of having the will to do it, the desire to do it, and the commitment to do what is necessary to do it, because it can throw up a series of serious challenges, which, if you don't stick with it, you can seriously persuade you to walk away and go back into the box, because it seems to be easier that way, but it's not in the longer term. So what I feel has happened, Sonia, is that some force has firewalled off us from the whole of even this matrix, which is a limited reality in itself, so that we're accessing a tiny part of it. Now, when you are accessing a certain reality, a certain limited reality, and then someone comes along and says, actually, there's more to know, and this is what I feel is going on. Now, from your point of observation, you're going to say that you're crazy, you're extreme, you're dangerous, you're ludicrous, you're ridiculous. And this is what so-called visionaries throughout the ages have been called, because and why they've been perceived so dangerous by those in authority at the time is because when you want to control a mass of people, you don't want multiple realities and a sense of all possibility among people. You want one reality which you can sell to everyone. You want uniformity, uniformity of vision, uniformity of lifestyle, everything. You want that because that puts people in a position of where the few can control the many. So what is a visionary? It's someone who's saying, hey, the reality you think exists is only one possibility. There's a range of other possibilities, not just the one that you're turning into now, you're locked into now. That's very dangerous to people in power. They don't want that. They want to limit perception, not expand it. And that's why they've always been targeted in their various forms right the way through history.
I think I love everything that you said, because it is so on point. And I think that mentioning the fact that understanding what are we talking about when we say reality, I think that's a crucial point to definitely enter, especially those who are out there speaking about the conspiracy and all of that. I think that that's very important, because when that aspect of it is left out, it does. Again, we're given a one-dimensional or a small portion of the whole thing, of what's really going on. So therefore, it's going to make it even more difficult for people to step forward if they're not incorporating that piece. So I'm happy that you are incorporating that aspect of it and bringing the awareness of our consciousness in relationship to the bigger picture. Were you going to say something, David?
Yeah, you're absolutely right. It's a very important point, because if you only uncover and communicate the five-sense level of the conspiracy, what you're doing is, and it has to be done, and I do it all the time. That's a level that people do need to understand and do need to have access to. And I hold my hand up to all the people that do it. You know, power to you. But if that's all you do, what happens is you just compile more and more information about the nature of your own prison. That's fine to understand your plight. But you know, what's the point of that indefinitely and alone, unless you can find a key to open the door and walk out to freedom, real freedom, consciousness freedom. And so the two have to go together, I would suggest, because what happens in the end is you just get yourself in a circle going round and round and round. And when you get round to a point where you've been before, you have more knowledge of the conspiracy, but in the fight, the way it plays out in the five sense world, but you're no closer to the key, because you're not looking where the key lies. And if you don't do that, you're never going to find it. I mean, state the obvious, but sometimes we miss the obvious. So the thrust of my work and my passion now is going into those areas where the key lies, because for me it's like this. You know, this is a situation where we are accessing a certain part of the matrix, a certain part of the three-dimensional movie, if you like. And if we look for answers to the problems we perceive in that movie, just by standing symbolically at the front of the theater screaming at the movie, then we ain't going to change a thing, because what we're looking at is a projection. To change the movie we don't like, we've got to find the projection room and change the real. Now that lies, and that can only be done by understanding reality and finding out and uncovering where the projector is. Where's it being projected from? Because otherwise, we're just screaming at the movie screen. Nothing's changing. We get more frustrated, more angry, more bewildered. And yes, here's the movie, and this is how it plays out. That's fine. But where's the projector? Because that's what's going to change the movie, nothing else.
Absolutely. And in addition to that, the system, the matrix itself, operates off of fear. I mean, the way it operates at this time, it's very heavily fear-based, and more of that. You know, if that reality isn't discussed, or if consciousness isn't incorporated into the information being dispersed, we are just having more of the same thing. And people just run around in fear, but having absolutely no idea how to transcend from the imprisonment. So that's, you know, that's absolutely, you know, what I've observed. Now, let's see, what I want to ask you also, I want to have you discuss a little bit of your book, The David Icke Guide to the Global Conspiracy, and How to End It. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, I've been researching this now for nearly 20 years, and I've been through a series of stages. First of all, it was very much the five-sense level of what's going on, and then it moved on into other dimensional influences, and then into this whole nature of reality. And I could feel very powerfully by 2007, when I wrote the book, that I was on the cusp of an enormous change within myself and where I was heading. And it was very, very tangible. And it's unfolded. It's happening. It's happening now. So what I wanted to do was to compile a book which fitted all the significant, from my point of view anyway, significant dots that I'd established up to that point. And this is the first book. My other books, I've looked at the five-sense level of the conspiracy, and then at the end of the book, I've gone into the more, if you like, expanded awareness, spirituality, and all that stuff. What I've done with this one is the first two chapters are all about the nature of reality. And then the rest of the book, which looks at a daily experience and the unfolding Orwellian world, from the perspective of the first two chapters. And it is devastating when you do that, because once you come from the understanding of what reality is, or at least the level of understanding we've got so far, then the way the world is structured and the way society is structured starts to make perfect sense. If you also understand a few coordinates, which is where this these shadow people want to take the world, and the manipulation techniques they use to take us there, in the light of how we are generating reality and decoding reality, put those three things together, and what seems to be a complex, stupid, insane world, and the way things are organized and play out, transforms into genius on one level. It's genius when you understand where those behind it want us to go and where they want to take us. Then the apparent chaos, the apparent bureaucratic incompetence and stupidity starts to take on the clarity of genius when you realize what the game is. And so I put all that together, and it's the end of an era for me in so many ways, because from here on I'm really going for this nature of reality, and my focus is finding this projector. Where is it, and what is behind it? Because when you read the book, which is 600 pages and about 300 illustrations, a massive, massive work of documenting. When you read that and you see all the different aspects in the way this conspiracy is playing out to enslave the human family physically, mentally, and emotionally, there is no way in the world that the origin of this conspiracy is people in dark suits sitting around a table somewhere. Those people do exist. That table does exist. But that's not the origin. We're still looking at a level in which it's being played out, not a level from which it's all being generated from. I've talked rather infamously over the years about other dimensional entities, many of which seem to take a reptilian form, who manipulate through certain bloodlines that have a genetic, therefore vibrational, sympathetic resonance and connection. But they also are not the origin of this whole enslavement. They are another level of it being played out. And I don't know, because I'm still on the journey, but I would say that in the end, I think we'll find that it's some kind of disembodied, non-physical, as we perceive it here, consciousness a deeply imbalanced one, but certainly intellectually very, very sharp, that is actually behind this in the end. And I will find it. I will find it. And that's where I'm going now. And this book is has been written as the end of an era for me in my life, and a compendium, so that when people say, what's going on? Well, there's a hell of a lot of what's going on between two covers. And also, another reason I wrote the book is that I'd started to see very clearly, particularly after 9/11, but even more so after the invasion of Iraq in 2003 and when weapons of mass destruction were not found and all the rest of it, a growing, an exponentially growing unease among gathering numbers of people all over the world, not just in one area, that there was this unease about what was going on in the world and where it was going. What I wanted to do was to produce something between two covers where you could say to people, hey, have a look at this, because this might explain why you feel uneasy and why the world doesn't make sense to you. So that was behind it as well. And it's interesting what's going on in this country at the moment, because we have a Labour government in power. We're supposed to be of the left, but it's further right than Genghis Khan. The Prime Minister, of course, was Tony Blair. He's left. It's now a guy called Gordon Brown. Now, in this period of 10-11 years of this Labour government, and particularly since 9/11, we have had the most extraordinary mass of Orwellian legislation that has created the Big Brother state in Britain. I mean, we have more surveillance cameras here per head of population anywhere else in the world. You, in an average day in Britain, if someone lives in a town or city, they will pass at least 300 surveillance cameras. And there's an incredible number of laws that have been passed. Now, what's happened last week is that they passed the law with tremendous manipulation and paying off of people in various ways to vote for it, whereby if the police consider someone to be a possible terrorist with no evidence, they don't need that, with no charge, they don't need that, they can hold someone now in Britain for 43 days as this legislation passes.
Wow.
Without charge and without telling them what they're being held for. And the Conservative Home Secretary, the shadow Home Secretary, as we call them here, the opposition Home Secretary. He's not Home Secretary, but he opposes and challenges the Home Secretary. And the Home Secretary in Britain is responsible for what you call in America Homeland Security. And he has been so outraged by the passing of this law that he has resigned his seat today, in fact, about 2 hours ago. And he is going to stand in what we call a by-election in his seat to be re-elected to Parliament on the issue of the Big Brother state in Britain, and asking people to vote for him as a protest against what's happening in terms of the end of civil liberties, privacies, and all the surveillance. Now, interestingly, all the mainstream political commentators who, you know, have got, you know, visions the size of a pea, they have ridiculed him, lambasted him. You're mad, you're crazy, you're having a midlife crisis. It's just going to be a farce of an election. And what they've suddenly found is that he's getting enormous public support for what he's doing. Because what the political classes don't understand, because they live in a bubble in Westminster, just like they do in Congress and Capitol Hill, they've not understood the scale of feeling now among vast numbers of people about their feelings and fears and concerns about the gathering Big Brother state, which is happening by the hour, no even longer by the day. And I'm considering, I may not, I'm considering it now, that I'm actually standing in that election not to oppose this man, not to oppose this man, but to support his stand and to take the opportunity to point out. Because what he's saying is the big brother state in Britain is being brought in by the Labour Party, and the Labour Party are the people to blame for this. Well, yes, up to a point, but no. In reality, what the Labour government are in Britain is the vehicle in Britain to bring in the big brother state. It's actually happening all over the world. And because of my website, davidicke.com, and the daily headlines page, I track this stuff every day. If people go to my website, they go into the research archive, and they go into the Big Brother research archive, they will see a stream getting bigger by the day of the Big Brother changes in society, not in Britain only, but all over the world, America massively, and Canada, and Australia, and all over the place, Sweden as well, as a so-called free socialist country. And so I might stand in the election just to point out Big Brother, the big picture, if you like, that yes, a Big Brother is coming in Britain, but no, it's not because of the Labour government, because it's happening all over the world, and it's a global agenda, not one that's just for Britain. But what is happening as a result of that is we're now seeing the level of public concern about this, and we need to tap into that and turn it into positive action for resisting this, refusing to cooperate with it.
Now, David, as you know, when we're having fun, the time flies. But before we do run out of time, I wanted to ask you, now that you were on the subject of politics, a few years back, you predicted the rise of our current president. How do you see this current political dance playing out? And if you can do that in about 2 minutes.
Well, the dance is playing out in the way it normally does, which is you've got apparently opposing candidates who are controlled by the same people. So it really doesn't matter if McCain gets in, who will be just another version of George Bush.
So there are no sides, basically. That was
there
my
are no
question.
Sides.
There are no sides.
There are no sides, because you have to kid the people they live in a free country, otherwise they might actually get up and do something about the fact that they don't. And one way they do it is by giving you a vote every 4 years or 5 years or so in Britain, 4 years in America, and where you think you're picking the president. But the people behind Hillary Clinton in the Democrats are the same force that's behind Barack Obama. Barack Obama's not there to bring in change. I mean, people are having a laugh. The person behind Barack Obama, one of the key people behind him, is Zbigniew Brzezinski, who, with David Rockefeller, created the Trilateral Commission in 1972. And Trilateral Commission is one of the very important groups within a network of organizations, including the Council on Foreign Relations in America, the Bilderberg Group, which operates worldwide, the Royal Institute of International Affairs in Britain, et cetera, which operate as a network to manipulate politics, not just in America, but worldwide. And Brzezinski said about a year or 2 years ago publicly that he, as National Security Advisor to Jimmy Carter, worked to manipulate the Soviet invasion of Afghanistan, which led to a million Afghan people being killed, by the way. And they wanted to do it to weaken the other superpower, as he put it, make it more difficult for the Soviets when they invaded. Brzezinski and the people that followed in the Reagan-Bush administration, which was actually the Bush-Reagan administration in truth, and Britain, trained tens of thousands of people in Pakistan, funded through the Saudi royal family and the CIA and British intelligence, to terrorist techniques, and they produced and created something called the Mujahideen, which then became the Taliban, and the whole stuff that is happening now. We must have a war on terrorism to stop the terrorists. Well, what terrorists there are, and there are far fewer than there are in government, I'll tell you that, were created, funded, and trained by the very people and organizations that are now saying we need a war on terror. They created the problem so that they could offer the solution, which was justifying the Orwellian state to fight terrorism that they created. And this is the man, Sonia, behind Barack Obama, who stands for change. Nothing will change under Barack Obama except whatever the network wants to change, because he's just a puppet on a string, just a sock puppet, just like Clinton would be and just like McCain would be. These are front people. They're not people with power.
I am so grateful that you explained that, because, yes, that is my understanding as well. But to have it come from you, because so many are disillusioned, and it is very, very sad. People really need to start waking up and doing their research. Well, David, we are basically out of time, but would you please let us know any additional contact information or events if you're going to be in the United States and anything of that nature?
Yeah, well, interesting. My work has just exploded. I mean, davidicke.com is the main point of contact for me, and the headlines page there, which is updated not just every day but throughout the day. I'm starting in soon to go on a trip around the world to talk in Spain, in Bucharest, in Romania, in Zagreb, Croatia, in Italy. And then I'm coming to America at the end of September to Santa Clara, where I'm talking over 2 days in the, I think it's the last weekend in September, but all the details are on my website. I talk for 7 hours in three chunks, connecting the dots. And when you connect the dots, the world looks very different to what it looks like when the dots are in isolation.
Well, David, thank you so much for being on the show this morning. It has truly been an honor, and certainly I would like to talk to you further about coming back. I would really love to, because there were so many things that we didn't get a chance to address, but I felt that the first part we needed to really explore the things that you mentioned. And to our listening audience, thank you so much for listening in. And you can contact me at Sonia, S-O-N-I-A-B-A-R-R, at yahoo.com. And you may visit my website at www.sovereignmindradio.com. Join me next Wednesday at 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time, as my guest will be John Perkins, author of Confessions of an Economic Hitman. Remember that the power to be a sovereign mind, a free mind, lies within you. Join me. Your name is Big Brother. You say that you want to be upset. Seeing me go nowhere. Your name is Big Brother. You say that you're tired of me. Children.